Do haunted houses attract spirits of living and the dead? Does the energy of performances attract ghosts? Could an experience with a ghost make you so scared you had to go home sick? Today we test the believability of the London Dungeon.
Welcome to Believing the Bizarre,
where we dive into the unknown and the unusual
and tell you whether or not we find it believable.
We hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving in America.
Yes, I put up the turkey post and I loved the not turkey response. I just want to say, it seems like nothing we've ever done has resonated more than the not deer episode. And I think it's always cool to just throw things out there and see what sticks.
Yeah, I can't believe that is it. But that, hey, it's cool as hell. We're recording this on Black Friday.
Yeah, it's the day after Thanksgiving.
Here. And tomorrow's my birthday.
Tomorrow is Charlie's birthday. Are you 31 tomorrow?
Yes, I am.
All right.
Yeah.
Dude, 30s are the new 20s.
Is it?
I'm making you. Do you feel better when I say
yeah,
that?
Yeah, it helps.
All right, then yes. No, I'm expecting my 30s to absolutely be my best decade thus far.
Are you not 30 yet?
Nope. I'm still in the 20s. Holla.
You're about to not be, though. This episode. Let's talk about this.
Yes.
Comes from London.
Yes.
The London Dungeon.
The London Dungeon.
Have you
There's
heard of
just
this
one dungeon in London, and this is it. The London Dungeon.
Have you heard of this place before? Because I had not.
I've never heard of the London Dungeon. Tell me more, please.
This comes from our listener, Katie, who worked there.
At the London Dungeon.
Yeah, from 2009 to 2011.
She has a resume in this world where when she applies for a new job and somebody looks at it, they're like, all right, let's see. All right. She worked at the London Dungeon.
Yeah.
2 years.
It's a crazy
place. What bullet points do you put underneath that? Wrangle ghosts, keep it nice and musky. Well,
I think probably formed tourists of tragedies that befell London.
That's how you would write it.
Yes.
It'd be like tour guide, but like that's how you would keep people away from the parts that they might accidentally kill themselves and or get lost. Like that, the catacombs the catacombs Reddit story where
yeah.
they disappear and they that tie
was a
rope
fun
around them.
That
was
a
lot of fun. No, yeah, a lot of fun.
So like full disclosure, normally we heavily, I don't want to say heavily, but normally we edit the heck out of these listener submissions to make them fit our episodes. Normally I normally edit the stories so they flow a little easier.
Oh, you mean lie?
No, not lie. No, not lie.
You mean like they send us this and you chop things away because they don't seem pertinent, or you like, you know, you add stuff to it through research or
like grammatically. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay. Are you saying you're going to read it because it's so well done?
I'm saying that she destroyed this. She did amazing. Oh. Yes. I didn't have to do much because it's well written as a story. She included pictures and she included history.
Yeah. So she's setting the bar.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Every future person that submits a story, keep up. And so let's say somebody who submitted a story before is listening right now. How should they feel? Shitty?
No.
Should they feel
they
bad about
feel
themselves?
Bad. No.
Should they ask us to take the episode down?
No.
I'm joking, by the way. If your listener submission wasn't good enough to be an episode, it wouldn't be.
Exactly.
So I'm joking, but I do want to know everybody. We love those episodes. Charlie's just giving you a hard time.
No, yeah, I'm giving you a hard time. No, we love them all, but she did really well. And I'm really excited to tell this story because it's really cool. And I did additional research on top of it. And doing the additional research gave me shivers because of how well it correlates with the stuff she said.
I cannot wait. It's been a minute since we've done ghosts, so I'm excited.
So, the London Dungeon of Tooley Street. I think it's Tooley, T-O-O-L-E-Y.
They do that there, don't they? Like Berkeley Square. Here we just say like this haunted place. We don't give a shit about what street it's on.
Right. I don't know what street the Sally House is on.
Some road?
Yeah, some road. So the history. London Dungeon opened in 1970s. And it's kind of like this museum, right? Where they go through and they tell you things about instruments of horror and what's happened in London over the years, and it's actor-led, so, like, the people leading are in costume.
I feel like you would love that.
I would love to go to this place.
That makes sense then now based on your questions where you're talking about performance. So is this a place where, was this an original dungeon where bad things happen, or is this just a place you go to learn about where bad things happened?
We'll get there.
Okay.
So it moved a couple times. It was on Tooley Street, which was on the embankment.
The embankment.
Embankment of the Thames. I can't say the river in England. The big river in England.
You know who you're talking to, right? If you gave me a map, I would know England is east of us, but that's Thames. About it.
The Thames River. Thames, there is. But now it sits near the Eye of London. So it's near the Eye of London, which is this giant Ferris wheel. It's in Harry Potter.
Which one?
Seven.
Okay.
Sevens? One. It's in the first one.
What if they have an actor who gets his, gets killed, but they don't tell him that? And then you just like give you $50 for this role where this person gets beheaded. And they're like, great.
They kill someone every day.
Yeah. It's bad job security.
So you asked if this was a dungeon. No, it used to be a train station. And the underground is where this London dungeon takes place, where they put all this stuff. So inside there's lots of tunnels and creepy, dark, damp bricks. And it's scary. But I have some pictures. She sent us a bunch of pictures. Do you want to see the first picture?
Yeah, let's see it.
That's the outside.
That looks like somebody with a shopping cart is about to go through a brick wall.
Oh, wow. Wow.
I'm just telling you what it looks like. And I like how it accurately is just like, it looks like Ohio. There's no sun. There's no sky. There's no pigment to the sky.
Yeah, I can see this in...
It's like you just blended every color together and threw it up there.
Ashtabula.
It's just like, yeah. Like, is it supposed to rain today? And they're like, probably maybe. Every day. I don't know.
Always maybe.
Yeah, I make fun of it, but that's literally Ohio, too, so I get it.
So the history is the Tower of London is up on the road by this tower bridge, and this bridge is, it's like this big, boring concrete bridge, right?
The Tower of London?
Yes. It's near this.
Now, so the Tower of London is near the Tower Bridge.
Yes.
Very creative.
By the Tower City. And there's the tower streets and the tower cars.
So nothing really happened in this place except in the 40s. And you know what happened in 1940?
World War II.
Yes, World War II.
The second.
And London.
The sequel.
And in 41, this train station, this dungeon, was turned into a bomb shelter because London was being bombed. Unfortunately, school children use this location as a bomb shelter. Specifically, a bomb landed directly on it.
Whoa.
And it obliterated everyone inside.
That is terrible.
Yes.
I guess there's no way to test if it's a good bomb shelter. That's so really sad, though.
It gets worse.
Oh, God.
It was so bad. Like, there were bodies stuck onto the wall that they couldn't even get off. And what they did was concrete over it.
Oh,
so there are like literal bodies concreted over in this where they have this London dungeon.
Now, obviously, the length and the width and the height isn't quite as massive as like the Paris catacombs. That's just going to be my connection.
Right.
Like I feel like every episode I have like a...
It's underground. It makes sense.
It's the one I always try connecting it to. The fact that they moved all the bodies to the Paris catacombs is so much less creepy. I mean, it's creepy in its own right, but this is just like a whole new level.
Yeah.
Whole new level.
And where the wall is, there's like a little memorial that says, we messed up. It's adjacent to the Jack the Ripper section of the dungeons, because they have sections for all the terrible things.
So this is all the tunnel thing, the London dungeon.
Yeah.
So the London dungeon itself was this bomb shelter.
Yes.
Dang.
Part of it. And this is where I did some of my own research. This is from the Southwark News in 2019, and it's a quote from someone who saw the destruction firsthand. And it goes like this. In 2011, nearly 70 years to the day, a bomb destroyed Stainer's Arch Street in London. Jim Smith, who is now 90 when he started talking about it, so he walked up onto the scene of the destroyed bomb shelter, and he said, I'll never forget that awful sight. Two little girls had been killed in the blast, and their bodies were just laying there charred. I still get tearful thinking about it now. And this is one of those things that's going to come up later, where this gave me chills.
It's just terrible, man. And it's like, you know what's crazy is, so that's in the 40s this happened.
Yeah.
10 years later, a whole decade later in the United States in the 50s, our school system was like, all right, let's do our rehearsal. Everybody get under their desks and put their hands over their head.
In case there's
a nuclear bomb. Maybe that's what they did wrong. Maybe there weren't desks in the London dungeon at the time.
Yeah, well, this is before they even had nukes in the 40s, right?
I don't know when nukes were invented.
This is the Manhattan Project.
Is that 52?
No.
When was the Manhattan Project?
About 40, 44.
So there were nuclear bombs in the
40s. There were not nukes used in active war yet.
I'm not battling you, history.
I know.
Like, I put one foot in the ring, and this is cold. It's like the pool. It's like, I'm out.
Because they didn't invent nukes till the end of World War II, and then they decided to use it to end Japan.
End Japan.
Yeah. Because they need to put them... I'm not going to get into the ethics of nuclear bombs.
But all aside, 10 years later, I'm not saying that they should have referenced this particular incident. There's been many bomb droppings before. But isn't it crazy? I know my parents probably did. I'm sure your dad probably did. But like, school, it's like, all right, guys, let's do nuclear bomb drill.
Yeah.
It's just crazy to think about. And it's like, it really sucks that like, the things kids have to learn and do, like, I know you did this. I did this. There's somebody with a gun in the school.
We have active school shooter drills all the time.
Isn't that just sad?
Yeah.
Like, it sucks that we live in a world where that has to be. But
I went to a whole... this is way off topic. I went to a whole meeting on Alice training, which is active shooter. And it was, like, 3 hours long. And we watched clips from actual Columbine in this training. It was the worst thing I went through. It was terrible. So, like, a lot of people have worked here. In the dungeons over the years. And Katie, being a social person, more social than you and I think.
Yeah, most people are.
She got to know some people and they told her their own stories. Different people, photographers, cleaners, actors, ride operators, ticket agents.
So was she an actress there?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. She was a tour actor. And everyone who's ever worked there says, this place is creepy. It's a creepy place.
Well, naturally a dungeon, you know what I mean? Like, there's just certain places. Attics, basements, dungeons, graveyards.
Yeah.
Like, more often than not, they're creepy.
I'm gonna quote her on this because it's pretty good. She said, paranormal business is absolutely at work there. No matter how much of a skeptic they are, everyone can admit that there is some freaky-ass shit in there. But yeah. So everyone's really like, yeah, this place is haunted, except for this guy named Tim.
Tim
is a manager.
He's not in the freaky ass business.
No, he says
we're kind of in the freaky ass business.
Yes, but he is a skeptic. So these are some little short stories that Katie got from people that she didn't witness, but she talked to people and they told her these stories.
So these are things told to Katie by people who witnessed them firsthand.
Yeah, so this is then third hand.
Yeah,
third hand. That's okay.
Everybody needs that good third hand sometimes.
Yeah, so she started, these are like the ghost stories everyone told her. She said, someone saw the naked torso of a soldier with a Roman-looking helmet and metal shoulder plates flying through the plague section. And that makes sense to England's history because there's been a lot of...
What history?
England. There's been a lot of... Rome did a lot there. I'll just say that. But there's no reason why this particular soldier would be in this spot. We'll get to this later, why I think that might be a thing, but let's move on. She said, a couple of people have seen the hem of a skirt and a pair of woman's shoes walking the wrong way around the Jack the Ripper section. So the opposite of the public. And many, many people have reported seeing a little girl shuffling her feet and giggling in Frying Pan Alley by the Jack the Ripper section. So there have been reports of legs, which you've seen legs moving before.
Yeah, legs and a shoulder.
And a little girl. The little girl comes in play later too.
We know how you feel about little girls.
Don't trust them.
I should say little girls' spirits.
Well, I don't trust little girls anyway. And also many actors have had their shirts and dress tugged on as if by a small child. There was one scenic artist who was working late, and she didn't want to terrify her other coworkers by telling her there was a man standing just behind her. So I think there was other people around, and she saw someone standing behind them.
We've already discussed this in the Ohio University episode, that you would be more than comfortable being like, yo, there's a ghost behind you.
I would, yeah. I'd be like, you gotta move.
I don't know. I don't think anybody can answer that without being in the scenario. What you say now might not be what you do then. You know what I mean? Like, I might be like, I would keep it from you so you feel comfortable. But if I saw it, I might freak out and be like, holy shit, behind you, it's a demon.
So another one from other people. There's a ride operator that there's this, like, ride in there that's like a drop ride. You go up.
gosh.
Drops. I love those. But this ride operator, he raised a group of riders to the top, then pressed the emergency stop button because he saw a little boy running around inside the restricted area beneath the ride and wanted to make sure no one was there.
Wow. They call the ride the bomb.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
You get to reverse roles. You get to be the bomb.
That same ride operator, at a different time, only had one seat free on this ride. So he stopped a man and his little boy from entering. And when he said, I'll come back for you too, the man said, it's just me. There was no boy.
Ah, I don't like that. Oh, my God. Ugh.
And she... This is his last one. It's, she said it's her personal favorite, spelled British ways.
Oh, you?
Yeah.
Favorite. Yeah.
Said at least once a month, there would be a customer survey and put it on the survey machine in the gift shop that says they particularly enjoyed the hologram of children playing in the Jack the Ripper section. There are no children in the Jack the Ripper section. So these are some of her coworkers' encounters from working there. But there are multiple sources outside of this that I looked up. And one from The Mirror, from Zoe Fossery. She wrote an article of a whole bunch of encounters. The first one is from Kevin Handy, who was an operations manager at the same location on Tooley Street that Katie worked at. This, oh my God, I'm going to read this to you and then remember it for later.
Okay. Normally, I just dispose the shit you say. I just control, delete that, but I'll keep this one
keep
for
this
at least
one?
The next 20 minutes.
And then when we get to the end of this episode, just, okay, ready?
Yeah.
This quote from the article goes, from Kevin, at the Tooley Street Dungeon, I was walking through the show spaces at the end of the day and poked my head into the bedroom set to check for persons potentially left in the show space. So this bedroom set is for the Jack the Ripper. So they recreated this bedroom. And he continues, at the end of the set, I could see what I initially thought was one of the performance teams sitting on the end of the bed in costume. It looked like a figure of a woman in a Victorian dress, sitting with her hands on her lap, staring at me. I called out to her, the actor, to move on, but as I was speaking, I felt a strong sense of dread and unease, and knew that whatever it wasn't an actor staying on position at the end of the day. Nothing happened when I called out, but the figure I could see remained in place. I stood in the doorway and stared for a few seconds, attempting to focus and for it to become clear as to what I was staring at. The more I focused, the clearer the figure was becoming. I closed the door to the room and stood a while, trying to gather my thoughts, with the intention of opening the door again in a few seconds to see if the figure had gone. A few seconds passed, and I reopened the door to look in. I could still see the figure once again sitting on the foot of the bed. I then closed the door again and retreated back to the green room to find another team member. I opened the door and once again looked into the space, but this time with my colleague, and it was gone. She entered the room with me and I reluctantly followed, both of us trying to find a coat or a rag or anything that I could have visually miscounted as the figure at the end of the bed. I brought up the house lights too, but we couldn't find anything. And that's Kevin's experience.
So he saw a ghost at the end of the bed. Do you think they have the Disney rules for like when they point, and they have to use their whole hand?
I don't think
so. They can't break character.
No, I don't think so. We're on to Katie's personal experiences. So everything she witnessed.
Okay, so that was from The Mirror. Mm-hmm. And now we're on to Katie, who actually submitted the story.
Yes.
Gotcha.
She's got three.
Ooh. Everything good comes in threes, but everything bad also comes in threes.
Let me show you the picture she sent with this one. One thing to bear in mind is all the... So she said, one thing to bear in mind is that all the workers weren't all terrified to be there, despite all the maddening, creepy atmosphere and all the fake blood and guts around. After all, our sole purpose was to terrify the public. So the only scary thing in there was us. Between performing little shows to groups of tourists, the actors would sit alone at their stations and... under the dim spotlight they could find, they would read books or plays or play Fruit Ninja on their phones, which I thought was funny. Way to date it. So these are her three experiences. And this is, the first one is called The Growling Man. And this one, it's not that scary. It's just like a little menacing. I was performing a show in the torture chamber, and I was about to take a run-up with my massive hook to demonstrate where it was used to end up on a volunteer from the audience. I was stopped dead in my tracks by a way too fake, Disney-style, perfect growl coming from over my head. And she literally stopped what she was doing and looked at the audience to see if they had heard it too. but they were just watching me. I'd been in the dungeon for over a year, and I'd known every torture noise and scream and sound effect, and a growl was not one of them. A few moments later, I was on tour again. At the end of the show, I was leading the group into the courtroom, standing with my back against the curtain, which led to the next area, a strobe maze, which sounds fun. From behind the curtain, someone a lot taller than me, and she's 6 feet tall, leant over her shoulder and did the same perfect growl in her ear. And this time, she felt their hot breath on her neck. I laughed it off. Sure, it was just that tall guy who wasn't in work today. I quickly whipped the curtain back to check to see if anyone was there, but there was no one. It was just the maze.
That's creepy.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's two different senses being hit in this one. Because you're getting the auditory with the growl, but then also you're feeling it. It's tangible.
Yeah. I mean,
not that breath is like entirely tangible. But it had to come from somewhere or something.
Mm-hmm. And then this is still the growling man. About a year after that, I was working in the courtroom, same place where she was, with a coworker. And again, this growl came from above her. There were no speakers or FX in the courtroom. And my friend was so terrified, she screamed and ran. When she caught up with her, she told her that it was the same exact growl she heard twice. So her friend was so terrified, she ran away. She said, wait, don't be scared. It's the same one I heard a year ago.
I'm sure that didn't calm her down.
Right, no.
The breath should be coming any minute now. It smells like onions.
And she said, but the last time, there was a breath in my neck. And a few ride operators had worked overnight there with a paranormal group hired to go on a tour of the dungeon. And one of the spirits who came forward was a very, very angry man in a hedge with a wine-brimmed hat who was present at the courtroom maze area. And I didn't discover this until I had encountered him 3 times. That's what she said. So this is the second story called The Concerned Little Girl. And this is, she sent me a voice message of what this sounded like. It's creepy. She did in her own, and it goes like, what's the matter? What's the matter?
She just says, Harry Potter mustn't leave Hogwarts.
There we go. So this experience happened midday. So it wasn't even night or anything. Just midday.
Well, but it's the dungeon.
It's so. Inside the dungeon. So yeah.
I don't think they probably have a good grasp on the time of day.
Well, I don't know. There's always the idea that the veil is thinner at night, right?
That's true. I think you could probably psychologically, while you're down there acting, I feel like since it's already dark, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like if there were no windows, I feel like it's why a lot of casinos don't put windows, because they don't want you to know it is, what time it is. They want you to lose track of time, almost like a fantasy world, which actually works really well for this dungeon.
So the thing about, before we get into this midday encounter with this little girl, remember what we talked about before, the bombing,
the charge,
and the guy that found the two little girls' bodies. Yeah.
I wonder if they call it mid-noon.
I don't think so.
All right. Katie, let us know.
So she felt pretty bad this day. She was working with the flu. Whether she was hallucinating remains to be seen. So she's still admitting that maybe this wasn't.
She was on that Michael Jordan. You don't know.
So there's a place in the dungeon called the Jack the Ripper section and Frying Pan Alley. And it's this corridor, so this hallway that links Sweeney Todd and Jack the Ripper.
Sweeney Todd?
Yeah, they talk about Sweeney Todd as well.
Was he real?
Yeah.
Sweeney Todd was real?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, man.
Why am I just now finding out about this?
I don't know. Yeah, it's real.
It's not fiction.
I don't think it was as intense as the movie or the play, but yeah, it's real.
I've seen both the film and multiple theatrical productions of it, and nobody told me, based on a true story. We have freaking horror movies that make no sense that are like based on a true story, based on like the smallest detail. How have I not known this?
Yeah, it's real.
How about the priest? I used to sing Epiphany for fun.
Yeah, you have to do some research on that. It's pretty cool.
I'll take your word for it.
So there are victims of Jack the Ripper in like a monument kind of fashion, and that's where this picture I showed you came from. It's got like an angelic kind of photo of the victim, and underneath it, it's like the body. It's creepy. So in the Frying Pan Alley, there are Jack the Ripper victims displayed in fake lights with windows and backlits and flickering lights. And these women are dressed in black. And they're very scary. Katie never really liked to look at these things because they're creepy. On this day in particular, she heard this little girl. She was leaning around the corner.
So this is the what's the matter?
Yes. So what's the matter? She was leaning around the corner of this pillar in the hallway. And she was looking left past the pub. And right in her ear, there was this clear as day, sing-song happy voice of a young child saying, what's the matter? or what's the matter? And she'd been working in the dungeon for a while at this point, and she thought they might have put in like a new soundtrack in this alley. And the two mannequins you can see in these photos were actually looking up at the third mannequin hanging out the window. So she thought it might have been coming from above. And it's not. And it's not, because she went and asked the people who were working in FX, like, did you add any kind of effects or anything? And they said, no, we didn't add anything to it. It's the same old effects. So they didn't add this little girl asking what's the matter.
Like, they don't pay us enough to add additional effects.
She, when she heard it, she felt off, but it was still scary enough for her to question the source of it. And it's in this scary place where she doesn't like to be anyway.
But she has the flu.
Yes, she has the flu.
Could be tripping.
And this is the part that got concreted over during World War II. And this is where all the children were seen. Like, remember the holograph?
Yeah, the hologram and the Jack the Ripper section.
Yeah, this is that section.
So this is the part that seems to be most notoriously haunted by children.
Which
both is creepy, massively reported, and also, you know, if you want to connect dots, it makes sense.
It does. So we're going to move on to our last story, the third story called The Disappearing Man. So this is the third and final experience that she witnessed in the Thule Dungeon. And this was also experienced by four other people. And this took place in the plague section. And she attached a photo of the plague section.
These will all be on social, by the way. Yeah. Like, when we refer, and this goes forward for every episode and every previous episode, but when we refer to something we're looking at mid-episode, you can always head to our socials to check those out.
Mm-hmm. So during the plague show, the actor would place the plague cart in the doorway under a blue spotlight. And they would start a group off, and then they would stop it. And at the end of the show, you wheel the barrel down the corridor or the hallway and lead them into the next room with the cart. And the next room was the Great Fire of London. And Katie was in the doorway of the fire room, and she was ushering everyone into the room while looking back at the plague street. So she was like looking away, like doing the pointing with the hand.
The full hand, Disney style. Go get burned.
And when she was looking back to see how many more people she had to fit inside, or whether she needed to tell the group in the fire room to squeeze in some more. The last four people that was in the group walking up the plague street were giggling nervously and kept looking back behind them. And Katie saw that behind them in the doorway where the cart was, so people couldn't get past this cart, was a man in a long gray cloak. And she wasn't worried because the previous show, there was a crypt and a crypt keeper, and he wears this long dark cloak. But she didn't recognize this particular person. And she said you could judge quickly who was who in the darkness by their hair, the way they do their makeup, and their own costumes. And like I said, she didn't recognize this person. And this man had a very slow walk about him, and he was putting one foot in front of the other and bringing down his other foot to meet it, like a walking down the bride down the aisle. And the group were scared. They kept looking back, and they kept like laughing, and they kept staring back and laughing and going faster and faster. And he was kind of chasing them slowly down this hallway.
So it's like that nervous laugh where you don't know how to react, is what you mean.
Exactly.
Where it's like, I'm feeling uncomfortable. My natural reaction is to laugh to cope with this because I don't know what's happening. Or they think it's an actor. And it's like, oh, I see you. Oh, yeah, you're following us. That's creepy. God, he's getting closer.
Exactly. And in the middle of the plague street, there's this little mannequin that sticks its head out the window, and it throws a bucket of water out because it's called the Pot Piss Woman. So reenact people throwing their bodily functions out the window.
So is it like frozen mannequin motion of doing it? Or I wonder if it's like an animatronic. Like
it's an animatronic. It keeps doing it every couple minutes. It gets
splash zone tickets.
Yeah, it's motion activated. And she was activated and threw her bucket onto the four people at the back of the group.
Damn.
They ducked out of the way, thankfully. So when this happened, when the bucket was flown, these people ducked. And when they ducked, the man that was behind them chasing them went through the floor as if he was being hung. So his legs went through the floor and there was just a body remaining, like a torso and arms on the floor. Not like on the floor face down, but like
through it.
Through it.
Like vertical in it. Like half his body was up.
Yes.
And was he like hunched over like he'd been hung?
Yeah.
Why would the motion of the water cause that to happen?
I think it's the motion of the people ducking.
So you think they are what caused him to do that?
Yes.
Why?
I don't know why. But that's what I think caused it. And the people that ducked, they saw this happen too, because they saw him hanging there and they thought it was an effect because they started clapping. Katie didn't ask them what they saw because she was so freaked out, and just kind of ushered them into the room. And as that group ran into the next room, she went over Plague Street, and it has no doors, no hiding places for this man to go. And she walked through it, and this person was not there. The only person that was there was the crypt keeper, who was reading a book, and she said she'd been there for nearly an hour, and no one had come through.
I give her props as a professional to not break and ask, or break character, so to speak, our tour guide, and ask them what they witnessed.
Yeah.
That had to be really hard.
Oh, I know. Can you imagine how terrifying that is? Mm-hmm. I don't like that story. That's the one where she got so sick that she had to leave early because she was so freaked out. I don't blame her. So there's one more story. This one is from Tim. Tim the skeptic. Tim the manager.
Her coworker.
Yes. Tim is this guy who's like very to the point, straight talking, very dry sense of humor, and he doesn't put up with any nonsense. This was one of the last days that the dungeon was on Tooley Street before it moved, and Tim was sweeping or looking for people that had been stuck in the building.
That sounds like a terrible reoccurrence.
Yeah, I think that'd be scary. I think people just like stay behind places. And he goes into the Jack the Ripper section, and Mary Kelly's bedroom scene is recreated in this section. And on this particular day, Tim entered the room and found a woman sitting on the edge of the bed, dressed head to toe in black, and her head down as if in mourning. He asked her to leave, but she ignored him. Not in the mood for this, he walked up and asked her to leave again, and she ignored him again. He started to click his fingers in front of her face, but she wouldn't look up or acknowledge him. He decided he shouldn't be in the room on his own anymore with a female guest, so he went to the office to get another female on duty, and when the two of them came back, she was still sitting there. The other person he grabbed peeked into the room and was too scared to go in. And I'm not sure what happened next. I worked with Tim on another job outside of the dungeon, and when I asked him about what happened, he went really quiet and gray, and did not want to talk about it at all, which was not like him.
Such a manager move to snap in front of somebody's face.
I know. But this is the story I want to do reference with Kevin Handy.
With a person sitting on the end of the bed.
Same f***ing thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Almost word for word.
Yeah.
Same room, same actions, different people. Terrifying.
I mean, it always adds, I mean, like that's kind of, I know we're not in the discussion yet, but this is the kind of stuff that pushes our scale to the next level, or yeah, an episode on the scale to the next level. When, I mean, you have multiple people from different sources saying the same thing. I mean,
I know
that's how you come to get results. You know, that's scientific method, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. You hypothesize and you
test it, and yeah, it happens, and you try it again. Limit variables. I mean, that's pretty concrete stuff there. I mean, as concrete as this stuff can go, but it's creepy.
Okay, so my question for you, do theaters attract spirits? Have you ever heard of the phrase, all theaters are haunted?
Theaters?
Theaters.
Theaters. Theaters. Do theaters attract hauntings?
Yeah, because we've all heard that theaters are haunted.
I think it would play into energy, right? Because
yes,
like when you're thinking about a performance, you know, a good actor or actress lays it all on the line. Like we've been told multiple times in our past that you should feel exhausted after a performance, like a major workout. Like you shouldn't have a ton of energy unless it's adrenaline after a performance.
Yeah.
So a good performance is going to leave all that out there. If you're watching a performance, chances are there's some type of tragedy or something. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's very little performances that have zero conflict. I'll put it that way. Otherwise, it's probably not that entertaining. So
high stakes.
Yeah. So you have people portraying emotions and investing in it with conflict, tragedy, heartbreak, betrayal, something like that woven in. And theaters last a long time. I think it also depends if, like, somebody died in the theater.
There's also personal elements, too, right? Like, interrelational of the actors.
Showmances.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That would be my biggest reasoning. I'm not saying whether or not I believe it. I probably lean just because I come from the theater background. But that, I think it's the energy. I think that would be my explanation for why it seems
it's like a, you know, it's like a buffet for ghosts.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, if you're thinking about it attracting, I think that would be the biggest question is, it stuff naturally there? Like when you think of a cemetery, like why is a cemetery haunted? Like, yeah, you have a lot of people buried there. But when you think of funeral services and stuff like that, and everybody's crying and it's sad, that might attract things outside the cemetery, outside the people that are buried there, which is why I think you could argue that cemeteries or, you know, graveyards are haunted more so than just the people being there.
Yeah.
Likewise, you could think about it where a theater is kind of a sacred space, so to speak, where it's just constant replenishing
and,
of energy.
Yeah. And I think that's definitely something to keep in mind.
Yeah, because it's not just a museum. These are actor portrayals.
People are performing here.
Yes. Like, and you showed me a picture, and I think I want that to be the main graphic for this episode. But the plague doctor?
Yeah.
And it's not just like a museum that's in a creepy place. It's what they're talking about is tragic.
Exactly. It's these traumas that affected one of the oldest cities in the world and how they affected everyone there. So are they attracting ghosts that experience these things at the time? Like the Roman soldier, many, 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 many years ago, Rome was in Britain. And that's where they set up one of their forts in London. Is that ghost from that time? Or is it something that was attracted there and still thought it was Roman time?
Well, if they physically died around that area, that absolutely could be a reasoning for that.
And the children in the Jack the Ripper section, I don't think they're related to Jack the Ripper. They're related to that bombing in the 40s.
Yeah, you kind of got, it's kind of twofold here where it's kind of tragic events happened there. Plus you have the theater component of attraction.
Yes.
So it's like, naturally a place where it might have been haunted on its own, even if there weren't productions happening there, on top of what they turned it into.
Right. There's just so much high energy and opportunity where there's just a lot there. And it feels like this kind of place through high energy and maybe kind of asking for it too, with all the stuff they talk about, reenacting these traumas, ghosts are attracted to this spot.
Are we in the discussion?
No. I just wanted to point that out, that this is not just a museum. It's acting.
All right. When we get to the discussion, but please refer to the last 5 minutes before the Patreon thing.
So would you like to talk about the London Dungeons?
Let's do it.
Before we continue, I just want to go ahead and thank all our new patrons at the recording of this podcast who have joined: Sean, Isaac, Taylor, and Madison.
I think we have a lot of, I think we have like 3 Isaacs.
Yeah, there's a couple.
We have 3 Isaacs, and there's another name too.
Killian.
There's Killian. 2. Multiple Killians, multiple Isaacs. And we appreciate all of you on this Black Friday.
And those people that are on our Patreon, most of them get to listen to extra content that we put out. And something that we're really proud of that doesn't get enough spotlight, I think, is the quiz. And the quiz is associated with an episode that comes out. It's the first episode of the month. And before you listen to that episode, there's this game that we like to play. One of us presents and one of us guesses. This time, this month coming out in December, this next episode, Tyler presented a quiz to me. I had no idea what he was talking about. But this one came down to the wire.
It's always good when it comes down to the last question. But the cool thing is, it's not just a quiz just for the fun of it. The loser of the quiz has to put out 3 episode topics. So guaranteed, every patron gets to choose the topic for an upcoming episode. So you literally get to get hands-on involved. And I also want to plug this just as a tease. We did it back in July with the bee leaving the bizar shirt. Every July and every January, if you're a member of our dedicated tier on Patreon, even if you join that month or you've been with us since the beginning, everybody gets an exclusive merch for free automatically sent to you. So if that's something you'd be interested in, we're not dropping the design yet. This is just an early tease a couple months out to get you hyped for it. Make sure you head to Patreon, check out our dedicated tier. You get all that extra stuff too, which is awesome.
Oh yeah.
But in January, if you're part of that tier, you will get the bonus exclusive merch for free.
That's a little bit about Patreon. So let's get back to the episode. So let's discuss this haunted dungeon. What do you think? What do you think about this dungeon? Just really generally, what do you think about this dungeon? Would you go there?
Oh, I would absolutely go there. I think it would take a toll to be an actor there.
I think so too.
I think at first it'd be really cool. It'd be like, it feels like a good, I just got my theater degree and I want to get a job.
Yes.
Job, which I don't have a theater degree. You do. but it seems like, it feels like it'd be a fun opportunity. And I feel like you would go there and it would weigh on you. And then you'd have that manager that snaps in your face and you're like, mm-hmm. man, this isn't as fun as I thought. It would be trippy. I think it's like people who work in haunted houses, but it'd be like a full-time haunted house.
I was just thinking it'd be like working a full-time house all year long.
I think there'd be really enjoyable parts to it, but I think it would just mentally be taxing after a while because of the negativity. And I think if you put yourself, you'd have to like, it's kind of like on you, I think, to show up and keep a positive mindset about what you're doing. Because I think if you don't and you just kind of succumb to the environment, it could be depressing.
Yeah.
But then that's not really about what this episode's about.
I think you have to have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, you'd have to.
Yeah.
But I think it definitely has all the groundworks to be a legitimate haunting.
So that's my next question. Do you think spirits can be attracted to this kind of place? I think we kind of talked about it a little bit before with the theater element.
Yeah, that's kind of exactly. It would be just rephrasing all that. I think because of the production, because the energy, and because it already has tragic elements built in, I think it could have homegrown ghosts, so to speak, but also I think it could be attracting things nearby. If you believe in that sort of mind, I think it'd be possible.
Well, do you think they're asking for it though? Like putting this kind of performance on?
No.
Do you think it's asking for this kind of activity?
Asking and like, is it intentional?
No, not intentional, but do you think it's like you're asking for trouble?
I don't know about that. I mean, maybe choosing a place where a tragedy happened isn't the best place to do it, but they're not, I mean, the owner of this, I mean, they did move too, so maybe that answers your question.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they're thinking financially. Like, they're thinking dollars and cents. They're thinking, this is a good place for it. This is a good place to do it. It makes sense. Let's, you know what it reminds me of? It's a movie I actually watched. I think I reviewed earlier last year on our Instagram, but it's Hell House LLC. It's like a found footage film where these kids try to make a haunted house at a place that was actually haunted. And it's such a slow burn the entire way through where you just start thinking they're losing their minds. But then like on opening night, all this terror happens. It's a really good movie. It's low budget, I think. I mean, it might be higher budget, you know, than you might think, but it's not like a, you know, summer blockbuster. But it makes me think of that where it's like haunted location. All these people trying to make it into a fake haunted or museum for this. They're not trying to like swindle you or anything. It's for learning, but it's just like these two elements coming together.
Do you think this last question, do you think with the several sources confirming similar stories, do you think it's credible?
Yeah. The only way it wouldn't would be is if Katie researched it and then used that as her inspiration to send in the submission, which I don't think she did.
I don't think so either.
That would be the skeptical side of me. But no, it's like, that's what you look for. It's like whenever we do multiple encounters.
Yeah.
You know, that's why like with the Michigan Dog Man, it was ironic that the ones we found weren't in Michigan. Or like, I guess we already referenced it. Like Catacombs of Paris. It was hard to find similar existing stories. Whereas for instance, Skinwalkers, how many different people had the same experience of driving and having this animal running alongside them or tapping on the window? Like it's... And that makes it more believable to me when multiple people or like any of the UFO experiences where people experience seeing the same lights in the sky. I think anytime you have multiple people that aren't connected, have no means to talk together and kind of collaborate the story. I think when they can come to the same conclusion.
Yeah.
Pascagoula, when the federal investigator or officer left, put the device in there and they didn't break character. Like those are the type of details I look for. That pushes a story more believable, unless I already innately believe, which I'll be honest, even if there weren't similar, I already believe in ghosts. So this kind of leans towards that. But hearing those combined, I think it definitely adds credibility to the encounters and what's happening here.
Yeah. Just from the children that died in that explosion and how many children are seen from different people in those areas and what Katie heard, it's that is almost like 100% confirmation for me. And also the Tim story and the guy from the mirror.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Kevin?
Kevin.
I think, see, here's the thing. It's like, these aren't our personal stories. Like, nothing we've done so far on the podcast is our own personal stuff. So we don't have the full context. We have the snapshot that we get either from a listener directly or from our own research. So there's very little that we can do always in terms of connecting dots. Like, that's what we want to do as humans and as storytellers. We want to connect dots. And sometimes there's no dots to connect. I feel like the paranormal world doesn't always require dots or connections. I think sometimes things just are, and that can be frustrating to us. Sometimes we don't get the full story, I think, or have the full context. But a story like this, where you can see cause and effect, like bomb drops, kids are killed, they see ghost children. One guy sees somebody sitting on the corner of a bed, and then somebody else sees the same exact thing later. Like, those are the dots that make me go believable, and not every story either has them, I don't think needs them. I think it's just, like, I think theatrically, I think narrative-driven, and that's just how I am, and I know that's my own flaw. I think humans are like that in general, but I'm not putting that on you, I'm claiming it for myself. Sometimes I can't get that, and that naturally makes me want to go skeptical or unbelievable, which isn't fair, because I don't think we always get the context. And I know I'm just rehashing the same things I'm saying over again. What I'm saying is in this story, because of how it fits into my little box of what I look for dots to connect, it naturally leans more believable for me.
I just love that we got the same story almost word for word from the manager and also the newspaper.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Have you heard if it's haunt, if the people have been experiencing things since it's moved?
I don't know.
Do you know where it moved to?
Near the Eye of London.
That's right.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's any... That would be interesting to see if there's been any haunting since then. That'd
I
be
bet
something,
there has been.
Katie, if you're listening, which I'm assuming you are,
I think
let us know if you've heard anything since it's moved. Because if it stays the same since it's moved, does that somehow negate some of the... Like, it would be more believable to me if since it's moved, it's been kind of quiet.
There would still be some kind of... I don't know.
What do you think about that?
I think eventually it would still attract that same kind of energy.
But it wouldn't have, like, the ghost children wouldn't make as much sense.
No, it wouldn't. That would be different.
So what are your thoughts on all this?
I think the fact that you can follow that through line with the bomb dropping, children dying, then children ghosts, I think that, you're right, it's narrative, but it's almost makes too much sense.
Where
I think it's perfect. And then the fact that I found that random article mixed with Katie's story, or Tim's story rather, but still, that gives me nightmares. And I had a lot of trouble going to sleep last night.
Because Did you have a nightmare?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You had a nightmare about this?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about it?
No.
All right.
It was just the woman in black.
With Harry Potter? That is the woman in black.
Yeah.
He's in that.
Uh-huh.
Daniel Radcliffe. I go believable.
I'd go believable as well. Like, I think we all knew this at a certain point in this episode, but... But that is our episode on the London Dungeon. So thank you for listening to the episode on the London Dungeon. If you're from the UK and you like this episode, just thank Katie. Thank you so much for doing great research.
Put her name out there. Put her Facebook name. We'll link her out. You can go personally thank her.
Yeah, right? No, but really, I appreciate it. And also, she's been a fan for a long time, too.
Yeah, we always appreciate the engagement. And we appreciate everybody that sends their submission. And again, if you want your story told on Believing Bizarre, head to our website, believingthebizarre.com. Go to submit your experience. There's a little form there. Please, like Katie, provide as much detail as possible. It really rounds out the episode nicely.
Yeah. And she probably waited way too long for us to do this episode because our back catalog
I think it was
is...
February. I think she sent it back in February. I could be wrong.
I think it's March.
Yeah. It's been at least 6 months.
Yeah, it's been a while.
She's been waiting. Every listener's submission, she's like, damn it!
But this is definitely one of my favorites. It's really cool.
So if you're in that holiday spirit, which I know you are because it's past... It's that sweet spot between Thanksgiving and Christmas, and you're a fan of Believing Bizarre, or you have a loved one or a friend that you know likes Believing Bizarre, we do have merch. If you go to believingbizarre.com and do shop our merch, we got hoodies, we got shirts, we have little baby onesies. If someone's expecting a little Bizarro, you can get them a little onesie. So head, check out all that merch. It's fun stuff, helps us out, and also shows your love for the podcast, which we appreciate, and the designs are sweet.
Yeah, and if you want to show your appreciation right now, and you're on Apple, go ahead and leave a 5-star review, please.
So thank you again, everybody, so much for listening. As always, I'm Tyler.
And I'm Charlie.
And catch us next week on Believing the Bizarre,
a podcast as bizarre as you are.